Welcome to In Difficult Times, a series of interviews with curious, inquisitive, and occasionally transcendent souls carving new paths through our current global crises. Your hosts for this exploit are Paul Reed and Anthony Gilbert.
Welcome to In Difficult Times. And in today's exciting episode, we talk to Rod Ferguson. Now, Rod is based in Australia. He's been a full-time professional Tai Chi and Qigong teacher for over 45 years. Not only does he have a deep knowledge of these arts, but he has an infectious enthusiasm that emerges in an easy-to-understand exploration of practical techniques. Rod's emphasis on teaching in a way that really makes sense to ordinary people distinguishes him from many in the mind-body community. He has lectured and taught not only in Australia, but also in the United States, South Africa, and New Zealand. He has been a driving force to ensure that both traditional and applied Tai Chi and Qigong are accessible to people of all abilities, from Olympic athletes to the frail elderly in aged care. And what comes over in this illuminating interview is Rod's approach, his commitment to community care, and his work with local and state governments in securing funding and promotion to provide free and low-cost classes. Rod is truly an ambassador of the art. So sit back and enjoy a talk with Rod Ferguson.
Good morning, Rod.
Well, good evening from me.
Good day. Good day, everyone from the United Kingdom.
Rod, how are things going in Australia? You were just mentioning that you've only had four deaths in the last how many months in Queensland?
We've had seven deaths in Queensland since the breakout, since COVID started. And we only had one yesterday, which was the first one in nearly 12 months.
What sort of population is Queensland?
About 4 million. And so they have been in quarantine and it hasn't got loose in the community. We've had a couple of closed downs. We did have a couple of months in March last year when things did close down and we weren't allowed to go out at all. But that didn't take long and we started going back out again and being able to run classes with 10 people. Then it went up to 30 people and then to 100. And we've been basically been running unlimited classes, except for a couple of three-day shutdowns that we've had. We had one in January and then we had one in March.
Wow. Rod, retrospectively, how many people are in Australia altogether? How many million?
Ooh, do you know, you're getting me 22 million, something like that.
Okay. And what is your population? What is your death toll altogether? Do you know, roughly?
About 90, I believe.
90 for the entire 90. Country. Well, yeah. Here's an example of somebody who did it right.
We're lucky. We're an island. We're a long way away from everyone. We did close our borders so that we haven't been bringing people back, except for people that have been coming back home into quarantine.
Rod, I live on an island too. You know how devastatingly bad it's been organised here. In our worst days, we had nearly 2,000 deaths a day, just under. So there were good measures that were taken by some countries and there were sort of slow measures taken by others that it's taken us a while to learn from.
But
I'm curious, you're a man who's well, let me just briefly, you've been in teaching Tai Chi now for 40 years, is it? More?
Yeah, about 44 years now.
Wow.
44 years. And you've also been teaching, from my understanding and contact with you before, you've often been teaching in the community. There's been big community events that you have helped organize and run, not just for many Tai Chi teachers, it's about, oh yes, I organized this global Qigong conference by myself and, you know, I benefited from it. But a lot of the time I read about you, it's for community purposes, it's for local town halls or councils or government.
Yeah.
There's a community essence to everything that you've done. Has that at all been affected over this COVID period? Because it sounds like it wouldn't have been given the good measures Australia has taken.
Well, in the shutdown in March last year, we had 3 months where we had to go without running our normal indoor classes. And really, it's been through the support of the local governments, the local councils, that has kept us going. In Brisbane, where I live, of course, we've been running classes for the council in the community, in the parks. They covered our wages to keep us going, so we still got paid even though we weren't actually able to teach. The Gold Coast City Council sponsored me to go online, and so I was doing 3 sessions per week online and basically getting paid the same amount as what I would have been getting paid for doing the classes in the parks.
Is that is that a common feature where the government pays you to teach? Is that something that is unique to you or something that they do throughout the country?
Where they don't do it throughout the country on the same scale. Queensland was the first to create like a community active and healthy program through the local government, the Brisbane City Council. And they just emphasize that principle that exercise is an essential part of life. And so they have all sorts of instructors from Zumba through yoga, a little bit of Kung Fu, you know, park runs and all of that sort of thing, as well as other things like dance exercise classes and bicycle riding, bicycle maintenance and all of that thing, just to encourage community activity and exercise. It all sort of started, we used to run classes in the parks as part of our normal Tai Chi courses, even when I first started doing Tai Chi back in 1976 in Sydney, my teacher always had one session with each term in the park, because that was sort of synonymous of what happened in China, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so we started doing the same sort of thing in Brisbane when I first moved up here in 1984. Just trying to think of how many years ago it was. It's probably getting up to close to 20 years ago now. Insurance and things like that started to tighten up on activities being held in public places. Mm-hmm. And our local council decided that, well, let's own it and promote activities and encourage, they say responsible organizations with insurance and that to actually run activities in the parks and make good use of our public spaces. And Tai Chi has been one of the most popular of all of those. After the Brisbane City Council, the Gold Coast City Council started up a program. And although I live in Brisbane, I'm a little bit biased towards the Gold Coast because I think their program is a little bit better. There's a number of different factors that have made that work. And now it has spread to many different local councils, Moreton Bay Regional Council, Ipswich Council, even up as far as North Queensland, Cairns. They've had these council programs. No one supports them quite to the same scale that the Brisbane and Gold Coast Council does. It's been very effective in encouraging people to get out in the parks and be active. From a Tai Chi point of view, we still have our regular academy classes where we teach traditional Tai Chi and weapon sets step by step in the usual sort of pattern. But we had to develop a different sort of program for introducing it to the parks so that people could come along and join in at any time. And so we're using Tai Chi Qigong patterns, 18 techniques, and Lohan Qigong, which is a sort of Shaolin Qigong exercise.
Can I clarify that because the local councils own the parks, therefore they take on the insurance issues that you were talking about.
So no, we have to have our own public liability insurance.
Okay. Okay, so that's you're still responsible for your own public liability insurance.
That's right.
And what about the customers, the students who the players, if you like, those that come into the park, they see you out there practicing or holding a big open class, and is it clear that they can just walk up and join in? Do they have to pay anything? Do they have to sign anything? Is it just completely open? Tell me how that works.
A lot of the classes are free, so they're fully sponsored by the council. They pay us to do that. But when a lot of the classes started becoming more successful in Brisbane, we kept them going as user pay classes at around about half the normal rate. So it's $5 per person. And then that allows us to direct that funding towards opening up more new classes in new areas so that they're free. Some of those classes are catering to certain suburbs to cater to certain age demographics, you know, so that it tends to be free for older communities. And then sort of working areas tend to have the $5 classes. But where we've been able to have a substantially sized class, you know, over 20 or 30 people, that works out quite well, having a $5 session. The Gold Coast prefers to keep nearly all of the classes free, and that has resulted in having quite large classes up to, well, since COVID, around 100, but before that, we were regularly getting up to 140 to even 160 people.
Wow.
That's so...
So I still teach like over 500 people per week in classes myself.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Rod, I want to applaud you. That is unlike anything I've seen in the U.S. We could learn something from that model. That is an amazing feat to teach that many people for free is just, I mean, wow. Wow. I want to move to Australia now. I'm going to relocate. Not to compete, but just because, wow.
I think you said something very interesting, Rod. You said something about that right at the beginning about how the government wanted to promote health. That was their idea. They wanted to promote healthy activities, and they were willing to step in and organize and help sponsor that. And that's I do think that that's has to be partly the role. Well, what do you think? Do you think that would that have occurred in another place? I mean, in the UK, for example, it's very difficult to get that sort of support and funding. And as Anthony's pointed out, it's not very common to see that in the States. Do you think that's something specific to Australia?
It seems to be. I do know that there have been a few programs in England, Manchester City, help promote Tai Chi classes there and has park lessons during summer. But yeah, it's something that, well, it started in Brisbane and some of the local councillors saw what we were doing in the parks, because we did have quite popular classes in the parks even before the government support. But then everything started to tighten up with regulations and restrictions on what people could do in public spaces, because it was a public liability risk to the councils for things to happen in their parks. So instead of restricting, they decided to go the other way and encourage people to get out. And then that also helps meet the community health needs. Yeah. And that's one of the things that exercise has been recognized. And, you know, even around the world, from what I've seen, when there has been lockdowns and everything like that, where possible, they've still encouraged people to go out and to exercise, even if it is only with one other person or in your own local area. And, you know, so there is a recognition that exercise in general plays a very important role in maintaining community health, and prevention is way better than cure.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there's also a considerable amount of science into the idea of just being in, you know, being in nature. You know, the whole. I don't know if they have this there, but I know it exists in England pretty prevalently, and it's starting to take hold here. The whole idea of forest bathing, walking in the forest, being in nature. I've looked into that because at first was, you know, I knew it was a program that was created by the Japanese during the 90s. It wasn't something that was old and traditional. And I started looking into it, and there's actual substantial science behind the notion that just being in nature lowers your blood pressure.
That's right. Yeah.
So if you can you imagine doing Tai Chi and being in nature? Yeah, it's just that's going to be a super boost. The only thing you could do better is maybe do it barefoot so that you're actually connecting with the earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is also I'm seeing a lot of science on as well, where they're finding that by grounding yourself, actually having physical contact with the planet, it improves your overall health by the electron exchange between you and the world, helps your organs function better. So yeah, you're hitting on my trifecta when I try to tell students how to practice. You know, movement in nature, barefoot. You know,
in the parks
and wherever you can.
Clearly, the idea is get out, exercise, and movement is part of that exercise. And that's a philosophy that all governments embrace. But what makes your situation so unique, Rod, is that your government is not only talking about it, it's implementing it. And I think, you know, I live in a country in which we talk an awful lot at those levels about health, but we never really, there's a huge gap between the talking and the implementation of it.
It took a lot of work promoting Tai Chi to get people to take Tai Chi seriously on all different levels, not just as an exercise for older people, or that I have focused on that a lot, you know, through arthritis programs and falls prevention and, you know, those things, trying to address the growing, there's still another pandemic in the world, and that is inactivity, because something like 50% of the population doesn't do enough just to maintain normal healthy function.
Yeah.
So that was something, but I've been, you know, very strongly promoting any evidence that we can gather about Tai Chi and its health benefits, so that the experts actually listen and realize that Tai Chi is a therapeutic intervention for many different conditions, as well as an amazing system of prevention and maintaining health.
I'm very
lucky myself that I started young, and now that I'm 65, I'm still quite active and able to do so much.
I have a report generated by the University of Arizona and a couple of Qigong institutes here in the U.S. That looks at, you know, does a 10-year survey of research into the benefits of Tai Chi and Qigong, from everything from cardiac to lung capacity to cancer prevention to falls prevention for older people considerations. I'll send that your way when we're done, so that you have it and you can use it to continue your good work there. That is I wish it was that easy to convince councilmen. We're still trying to get people to believe that, you know, Qigong and Tai Chi are not devil worship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's still a little faction that, you know, tends to think it's some mysterious religion or some sort of cult or something like that. But generally, people have been much more accepting. And especially as they see ordinary people getting out and, you know, having those sort of numbers also is a big influence on the community. To show their friends, you know, like, oh, I've had this problem, but I've been doing Tai Chi and it's really helped me. And, you know, we've had many stories of people that have been getting other forms of medical intervention without such good results, and are absolutely amazed when they come to Tai Chi what benefits they can get from that. You know, as Roger Yonke is always talking about, it's the medicine within. You know, when you're doing Qigong, you're producing, you know, this amazing medicine. You can't buy it anywhere. You know, this science is not that good yet. They can observe some of it, but they can't actually create it. And yet we can do it ourselves for free if we just devote some time to it.
I'm wondering if that idea of you being encouraged to do it outside in the parks, as you said, part of it is rooted in the romantic ideas we all hold about China, everyone in the morning out in the parks practicing, and that combination of what Anthony's just talked about as well, being in fresh air and movement. But as you have just hinted at, the publicity, the positive publicity that comes out of that, the example that you give, the fact that so many people are passing by and watching and probably developing a curiosity as to. So instead of it being in a closed school somewhere in a building that you won't ever see, you're constantly reminded that it's something that happens outside.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that must have huge benefits on a community basis.
Yeah. It's sort of like Bill Douglas with World Tai Chi Day trying to create that. We don't get such a big response for World Tai Chi Day because we're doing it every day in the parks. It's no special event to do that. But, you know, that's the sort of thing that, you know, you need to be seen so that people know what's going on. And with ordinary people doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, yeah. You don't want people just in, you know, youngsters in karate suits and stuff. You need all age groups of all physical capabilities out there showing.
Right.
When I was teaching in Spain up until fairly recently, and as obviously like Australia, Spain has a fairly decent climate, so it was very easy to organise outside activities on a reliable basis.
Hmm.
And at the beginning, nobody wanted to take it outside. Everybody wanted to stay inside. But there came a point in the year in which I insisted that we started organizing the classes in the parks or on the streets or in the what are called the squares, the plazas around the town. And there was an initial reluctance and an embarrassment and a self-awareness and a consciousness about it. But that soon broke down. And like you were saying, people that would address us and come up to us at the end and say, how can I join? What's this all about? Please tell me more about it. Something would never happen with a club.
Yeah, I had my experience with it was completely different. When I first started teaching Tai Chi, which is about 10, 15 years ago, and I actually was a student of Raja Yanka. So in that transition, I'm coming out of an Aikido Judo background and got into Tai Chi after a back injury. Found Roger through that journey. After I took his 200-hour training program, I felt a little reluctant with just 200 hours of training to actually go off and teach. So I decided what I would do first would be to do lessons in the park for free, just get out and hone my own skills. Because though I was good at judo and aikido, and I had taught those, and I had credentials to do that, I didn't feel that 200 hours really gave me enough to know the forms the right way, you know, to be able to teach them. So I started teaching in the park, and we had a good group going in Boulder, Colorado for about 6 months before the town shut us down because we just got too big.
Mm.
You know, it was just, there's too many people in the park, and you know, you drive by and you'd see 20, 30 people out there doing Qigong. And then slowly somebody would come by and ask what was going on. And then slowly cops would show up and look at us. And then finally cops showed up and said, you can't do this. And they didn't want to hear it. Yeah, you know, but yeah, it's free. I'm not making any money at it. No. So in other words, we just can't get together here, 20 of us, and exercise. No. It was a strange, is it for Boulder, Colorado, which is usually viewed as being very open-minded part of the country. Just, you know, if it was anything that shook the foundations of the community too much, they didn't want to see it. And I think that is probably the prevailing attitude in the U.S., with the exception of certain pockets. I know Austin has a robust mind-body community. I know San Francisco does. I know New York does. I've never been to Chicago, so I don't really know if they do or they don't. Most of the major cities have some sort of robust, you know, community intervention, but major cities in this country make up very little of the overall country. Yeah, and unfortunately, many places are, like I'd mentioned before, where you have this notion of this being foreign, and the minute you start talking about chi, it's devil worship and magic, and you can't get into the occult, and yeah, it's a very strange place. I am envious of Australia right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I promised to stay out of Australia, but you know. Well, the other Anthony Guibert, who actually has name recognition to my level, lives in Byron Bay, and he's an actor. He's an actor and a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I occasionally get an email for him. He occasionally gets an email for me. And I said, well, I'll stay out of Australia so there's no confusion. But I may have to go back on that promise. We have this bias in the U.S. that, you know, we, especially now with the nationalist movement growing, we have this bias towards the idea that we are, you know, we've got it right. We do it the right way. Everything in the U.S. is perfect. You know, we walk on water and shit rainbows. But realistically, we don't. In context, there are many communities in the world that we should be learning from. You know, like yours. Mm. You know, I'm very moved to hear that there's an ideal being expressed somewhere that is, you know, truly the ideal of these arts is to help people thrive. Yeah. You know, and you're doing it well. So not that I want to sit here and you know, overpraise, but you know, I have not yet met somebody who told me they had 150 people showing up in the park for free.
Yeah.
That's something that should be applauded at this point. And if my whole family wasn't sleeping right now, I'd applaud you.
Well, it's been a constant thing of trying to demystify Tai Chi as well. And to, you know, like Chi, to me, Chi is energy. Mm. And, you know, there's certain concepts that are unique to Qigong and understanding how energy works within the body that's maybe a little bit different to some aspects of medical science. But my focus has always been to apply the principles of Tai Chi towards getting an outcome. And to do that, we need to explain it in a language that people can understand. And so, you know, we'll say, oh, yeah, the Chinese concept of qi is the universal energy. Everything is made of energy. And people go, oh, that's a bit strange. And I go, yeah, I know. It's that sort of scientific fact, isn't it? That the whole world is really just different forms of energy. And all energy moves in waves, you know. It goes up and it comes down. And that's what we call the yin-yang, if we're speaking Chinese. But, you know, it's just really the two different phases of energy, whether it's sound, whether it's light, whether it's gravity waves going through the universe, or even a wave down the beach.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's another reason why the classes on the Gold Coast are so popular. I do them overlooking the beach, and we have the ocean right there front of us. And I can use it as an example that the wave of energy comes through, lifts the water as it becomes shallower, but every wave builds up, reaches its crest, and then it decays. It starts to fall. The water falls. The wave breaks. And then the water flows back out. And the next wave of energy comes through to move it. And, you know, by thinking of practical, everyday examples, it takes away a lot of that mystery. And even how the different parts of the body relate to each other. You know, the emphasis on the internal organs. And, you know, our season at the moment is autumn. And so as weather starts to cool down a little bit, it's not unusual that people can start to get congestion on the lungs because they go to bed while it's warm in the middle of the night, because the night's getting longer, is enough time for it to cool down. And so you have to pull the blankets up halfway through the night sort of thing. But, you know, that means that the lungs are more susceptible to getting a chill. And so it's a way to explain like the metal element of traditional Chinese medicine, but try and relate it to everyday life. Nice. And COVID has helped in that way, because we've tried to emphasize, you know, the things that you really have control over are hygiene and your own immune system. You know, it still can't be 100% perfect, as we know, but it's still the best options that we have is to strengthen our immune system. And we talk about how stress can weaken the immune system, and relaxation response can put the body into the long-term healing and repair mode rather than short-term survival. So all of
Rod,
those...
I've got a question. I've got another question for you that comes out of everything that you've just been saying. You sound like you're a man who's trying to almost look at the principles of Tai Chi and see how useful they can be for your community. in the way that you're teaching, in the even down to the language that you're using. You're saying, well, maybe I'm not going to use this term because it's not going to make sense. It's too mystical. I'm going to try and demystify this art.
Yes.
That's also something that runs contrary to a lot of the way traditionally it's been practiced, by holding on to that mystification, using jargon to the point in which, if you read the Tai Chi classics, I defy anyone to make any clear sense of any page in there, because it's wrapped up in these terms that are so complex and difficult to translate to a 21st century practitioner. So you're doing this, and you're doing it because you believe that there's a need for it, or you're doing it because it just makes sense to you?
Both. I guess for myself and my own learning is it all sort of makes sense to me. I'm not highly educated or anything like that, don't have any degrees in science or medicine, but I've always been interested in that sort of side. And, you know, it's simple. I remember one person saying something to me about, you know, oh, there's no such thing as energy. And I go, really? You mean to tell me you feel exactly the same all the time? Some days you don't have more energy or less energy. Oh, yeah, of course I've got that. And I go, well, what do you think we're talking about? That's what we're trying to cultivate, this sense of having a sense of well-being. And if you're not feeling so good, sometimes you need to lift the spirit and get things moving a little bit. And so it's always in that sort of practical side. But I have, I suppose, self-satisfaction, I guess it would be. I've been able to help a lot of people, and people give feedback of the benefits that they have received. And so that gives a lot of self-satisfaction in being able to do something worthwhile and something that can affect the community on a larger level. Even through the health department, we've been able to do sessions for the GPs, you know, in their general practice, so that doctors are actually getting exposed to this information in ways that they can understand, you know, simple things like pressure on and pressure off. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, the yin yang and start calling it substantial or insubstantial. But, you know, when we put the pressure onto one leg, we increase the pressure on the blood vessels and it squeezes the blood back towards the heart. When we take the pressure off the other side, gravity just takes the blood down there. And so we become like a mechanical pump. And, you know, that sort of thing, you know, opens doctors' eyes. They think, oh, right, it really is simple, isn't it? And I go, that's right. You know, the simplest science is the best. And then you can get so many benefits from it. Even in relationship to cancer, you know, the lymphatic circulation. Those sort of things. We just explain, you know, it's pressure on and pressure off, and that's what moves the lymphatic fluid around the body. So trying to just take the simple principles and make them everyday things that anybody can understand, really.
Anthony, you were going to ask something, I felt.
I was going to, yes. I was actually going to refocus this a bit. We spoke earlier about stress. What stresses are you seeing on your community there from the idea of COVID? Clearly, you're doing it well, so there's not, you know, in the U.S. we have half a million people dead, and that's, and you know, a couple of thousand daily, you know, in my state alone. That puts stress on our communities, psychological stress. You know, the idea of you're not sure. You know, we're talking at one point it was as high as 1 in 50. Now we're talking somewhere around 1 in 100 people has the virus. And that fear is always with us of, you know, who can you not get too close to?
Yeah.
Do you have the type of psychological stress in Australia? Are you feeling that psychological stress because of the world condition of COVID?
Yeah, there is a fear. And I think even now for a lot of people, and that's part of the reason why the community has been so good in trying to prevent and keep things out, because there is a fear that it could get loose. You know, we're not immune to COVID. We've just been lucky in so many ways that the management has worked. We stopped, you know, the cases coming into the country, you know, the cruise ships and stuff like that when they first started coming in. That's where we got most of our cases from, and then returning travellers. So once they started putting people into quarantine and that sort of aspect of it, it stopped the spread in the community, but there's still a fear that it could get out at any time. And ways that I see this fear manifest is that people are driving more aggressively. And the people that are, you know, like, oh, all this, you know, like, you know, like when we had our recent 3-day shutdown, all of this just because two people got COVID? That's unbelievable. But they don't realize that, you know, if nothing was done, then those two people could have spread it quite widely.
Yes.
So our contact tracing and stuff like that has been really good. But that does leave a lot of people stressed and worried. You know, like people haven't been able to visit sick relatives in hospital and things like that. And so that does still create a lot of community stress. And adrenaline, you know, is the nature of stress in that sense. And it's a short-term survival mode, fight or flight. So people are becoming, you know, I say it's not that unusual because that's what adrenaline does. It makes you more aggressive so you can fight off the tiger or run away. So it's still pervading our lifestyle. You know, Australians are generally known as being pretty easygoing, but I have seen an increase in stress, and especially on the roads. And they say the consumption of alcohol has gone up a lot more, you know, things like that. So the stress is still there.
Are you adjusting your teaching to address that stress in any way? And if so, could you explain that?
I have, by talking about it a little bit more and how these different triggers create more stress. And, you know, especially when you keep worrying about it, like when COVID news was first coming out, people were watching it, and the news cycle tends to repeat things over and over and over. So you're getting the same message over and over and over. So you start to worry about it more. So talking about it more has made a difference. But the way that I've been taught Tai Chi right from the beginning is that relaxation is the first and most important point. The idea is that you go as far as you can comfortably. You're trying to, it's the opposite to what most people perceive as working out. You know, they think you've got to work hard. Well, it's not. You've got to be persistent. You've got to be efficient, but you don't have to strain. And so that concept of doing things in a relaxed way has always been a part of our teaching. So
maybe you've got an advantage because, as you say, Australians are fairly laid back anyway, so they embrace that idea quite happily. I say, when I was in Spain, there's an attitude there about Spaniards, particularly Mediterranean dwellers, that they have this mañana idea, this idea that everything can be done at a later day if it needs to be. If it can be put off, they'll put it off if it's at all possible, because they could do something more interesting in the meantime. And they embraced Tai Chi very, very wholeheartedly because it fed into that culture of take it easy, only do as much as you need to, take it at your own pace. You know, it's a very community-based event. It brings people together. It's about sharing. It's about generating a sense of good feeling. And so, you know, I think the way that you're describing it in Australia reminds me how much it's become a cultural reflection, Tai Chi and mind-body practices. It's almost like a mirror that's being held up, and possibly why it's so different in different countries around the world.
Yeah. It's going to pick up on, like anything, it's going to pick up the flavor of every community. So yeah, Australia may be a little laid back. Here, I see a lot of Tai Chi
it's definitely a practice of the older generations, you know, those 50 and over. You don't see a lot of 20-year-olds doing Tai Chi unless their teacher is very well skilled at the martial aspects of it, and that's the way they're teaching it, because that really appeals to the younger people. But as far and there are some very skilled Tai Chi practitioners in this country who do teach it as a martial art.
Yeah.
But you don't see the focus on health as much. You know, you see, like, again, it is something. Qigong you see more of, I think. I think you see more Qigong towards health. I see that more. It's becoming more in the last 10 years prevalent in health club situations and in community situations. And you'll see inevitably a yoga studio that is offering a Qigong element, you know, but you're not seeing it stand alone by itself the way Tai Chi does.
I think yoga has attracted more of a younger market than what Tai Chi has, but there are some younger people that take up Tai Chi and Qigong as well.
I think it's the clothes.
I think that it's interesting for a lot of the yoga schools how they have yin yoga and they've started to incorporate a chi yoga and things like that into their yoga. But at first, you know, we sort of think, oh, you know, like it's sort of like a watering down of everything. But on the other hand, it's sort of also made some of those things a little bit more, well, sparking up their interest so that they do want to know a little bit more about it. And
That brings me on to a question I'd like to ask you, Rob, because I remember watching one of your videos on Facebook of a public demonstration, and you were giving it for an hour. And I think you were doing, it was one of your regular slots. I don't know whether you had any, I don't think you had anyone in front of you. You were on the stage and you were just talking to the camera.
Yeah.
And it was, apart from being, it was very charismatic and it was very extremely well explained. And it was very interesting for me as another long-term practitioner to watch. But I also felt like it was presumably during the time when you couldn't teach publicly, but it also felt like this use of technology was enabling you to reach people, in this case, in the southwest of the United Kingdom, who could appreciate your approach and your diverse ways of explaining and demonstrating Tai Chi. Do you see there being a role for technology in the future in the way that, even though someone like you is focused very much on hand-to-hand community open teaching, do you see a role of technology in Tai Chi or mind-body practices?
Definitely. It has changed things already. The Gold Coast Council sponsored me to do 3 sessions per week while the classes, you know, were in recess. And that was very well accepted. You know, they were very pleased with the amount of people that watched. As you said, it ended up being worldwide, not just for the Gold Coast community. But the local Gold Coast Council decided that they'd even put it up on the front page of their main Gold Coast website because they thought that that shows what a good place the Gold Coast is, that even in lockdown times, they're still promoting active and healthy lifestyles and, you know, encouraging people to exercise. And they thought, well, it's still good publicity. People in Spain will see it. People in the United States will see it and realize that it's such a beautiful place because there's so much good stuff going on. But even after we went back to do the classes, they decided they want to keep one class going per week. So every Friday morning, I still put up a new live Facebook lesson. And so that's become a normal part. I also do through one of the aged care organizations. They have something called a virtual senior center. It's not just Tai Chi, but Tai Chi and Qigong. I do 2 sessions per week for them. They do other chair exercises for people with low mobility. They have some people that just come on and talk about things, you know, of interest. So these senior citizens, some of them are not very mobile and able to get out, but they can watch it on online. Sometimes it's the carers. They can't get out because they're responsible for somebody else, looking after somebody else.
Yeah.
But they can join in and do a session online. And those things have been growing in popularity. So I think that the online classes are going to be an ongoing part of what we actually do. And the people that normally come to the parks, when they had those sessions, got used to doing it. And quite a few people said, you know what, I practice more now that it's online than just coming along to one or two lessons a week in the park, because they can put it on at any time and come back and watch it again. And even some of the sessions that have been up there for 12 months are still getting new views. New people are still coming in and watching it. So there's a whole lot of information there. And I think it will be something in the future.
Okay. Anthony, were you going to say something?
I'm going to skip that because we're on a better track right now. Rod, moving forward, how do you think that this pandemic is going to change the world? Do you think things are going to get better or worse in terms of, it's an opportunity for reflection and awareness of the world, of how interconnected we are on the planet. And, you know, I'm interested very much in whether or not this is a pivot point. You know, is this a point where we're going to pivot and change our general attitudes, or do you feel we're just going to go back into the cycle we had before?
Yeah, it's a bit of a worry. I'm sure you've got plenty of people over there that just believe that this is a big hoax anyway. It's not real. It's a government plot, or, you know, Bill Gates is trying to transplant a chip inside everybody. All that fear side of it concerns me more than, in a sense, just the disease itself. I think that we will overcome it, but it's also a sign that there's going to be more of this sort of thing happening in the future as viruses do cross over from other sources of life other than humans. You know, like we've got a lot of mosquito bred spread diseases like malaria and dengue fever, and, you know, there's been an increase in those sort of things in Australia. I think they call Hendra virus, which has come from the fruit bats and got into the horses and has spread to humans as well. A lot of those are not quite as aggressive as what the COVID virus is, but I still think that there's going to be more of these sort of things in the future. And it's sort of related to our relationship with nature. And as we put more and more pressure on nature, I think it is going to come back and bite us in so many different ways. You know, we don't know the full ramifications of it. You know, like you've probably heard we've got dangerous and poisonous snakes down in Australia. You know,
and spiders,
you know. You know, there's been a lot of research on those venoms of how they can be used for medicine. You know, they've been able to use them in things like heart transplants to stop rejection and blood clotting and things like that. So there's a whole positive side of it. But sometimes I wonder, you know, how far this is going to go. We've been through even with peace, you know, there's still a lot of warfare and fighting going on around the world, but for most of us in the developed countries, we've been so lucky to have such a long period of relative peace. And I do think that those things could start to deteriorate more with the pressures that these things put on the community.
No doubt. Is there a reason to hope?
I think so. I always try to be optimistic, and, you know, when I do start to worry too much, I go and do some qigong, and, you know, it never fails to work.
Yes.
You know, even when I have been under some, you know, or in pretty stressful situations, it's been a very valuable tool to have, to be able to use. So to me, learning to be more mindful, to be more, I suppose, respectful for other people and other life forms. The important role of nature rather than just having resources to exploit, but to realize it's an important balance. Those sort of things give me hope that we will be able to come to a better balance in the future.
I think those are great words to maybe finish on. I mean, they're very positive, they're very hopeful, and they leave us with a sense of purpose. That balance and relationship with nature is something that we surely all must look to focus on as we go forward. So thank you. I think we should wrap that, we guys?
Yeah, that's a good place to end it on. I like that.
This has been In Difficult Times. We thank you for lending us your attention. It's a small yet appreciated gift, and we wish you well in the days and months ahead.